And welcome back to Side 2 of this cassette, the DX Audio Service for February 1986. Well, here he is, straight from his old Kentucky home up in Walled Lake, Michigan, Mr. Bob Walker with the domestic DX Digest column.
Well, Fred, thank you, and hello, everybody. Bob Walker here with you for this month's edition of the DX Digest on the DX Audio Service. A lot of information to pass on to you this time, including several test results. I'm sure as we rapidly approach the test season, as Fred has mentioned to you earlier, several tests upcoming in the DX season. But we'll start it off, as always, with the special items, beginning on 740 CBMN. In Marystown, Newfoundland, has been advising listeners that they are being phased out in favor of 90.3 FM. On November the 14th at 2:30, then they played Incredibly Help Me Make It Through the Night, that heard by Ernie Cooper up in Massachusetts. On 780 WZZX in Lineville, Alabama, boy, I remember those calls from an FM in Jeffersontown, Kentucky 10 years ago. They, on December the 26th, were noted at 1727, formerly on 1540 with a female announcer, Alabama weather summary, and a full data sign-off. They were loud over a looped WBBM and through Splash on local WPIC on 790 on their post-sunset authority, Jerry Starr hearing that in Ohio. On 820 KQIN in Burien, Washington, has been heard on December the 11th full-time via a newspaper article. They're 50,000 watts day, 5,000 watts night, unlimited four is their antenna pattern. Their IDing is Quinn, kind of unusual. On 840 On 840 CHUR in North Bay, Ontario. Per their vary, their power is now 10,000 day, 10,000 night, 24 hours a day. And they're utilizing the Motorola CQAM system. On 1160, a couple of items here. WFEN in Fenton, Michigan has been heard with a 100% readable signal with, as Jerry Starr reports, top 40 music. CNN stock market reports. Jerry, I'll beg to differ with you. Their format is actually adult contemporary. Is my location here in Walled Lake, Fenton, Michigan, some 20 miles away, and they've gotten to be quite a pest on 1160. On December the 9th, they've been heard in New York as well with a fair signal, ID and promos fading to WJJD. On 1260, WBUD in Trenton, New Jersey, was heard way overall in late November at 4:18 in the afternoon with an announcement that, quote, the authority has been granted to conduct indefinite program test. They then went into Lawrence Welk music and promo. Dave Schmidt reports that this station's been on a program test for many years. 1270 is the frequency for WSPR in Springfield, Massachusetts. They've dropped their all-night schedule. Boy, we don't see many of those anymore, do we? Also on 1270, WTSN in Dover, New Hampshire, has been on until 0210 Saturday and Sunday mornings with top 40 music. And on 1270 as well, CJCB in Sydney, Nova Scotia, seems to be running all night on some mornings with country and western music, Ernie Cooper reporting the previous three items. 1360 WRSG in Binghamton, New York, is now on these calls with a rock oldies format. They're the former WKOP. On 1380, WRKG in Lorain, Ohio, has been heard weak at 0600 on December the 1st, in a mess with their sign-on with an instructional single side band, of course, Star Spangled Banner. Some of my ham radio training coming out there. On 1400, KITZ in Tacoma, Washington is back on the air after 1 year of silence. They came back on New Year's Eve. They were noted on January the 2nd at 1900 with an automated oldies format that heard up in Washington State. On 1460, KARR in Kirkland, Washington. Station is now off the air, this as of December the 31st. On 1520, WWKB, Buffalo, New York. Yeah, the new calls are on the air. They were noted on January the 3rd. Of course, they're the former WKBW. Of course, they're still using many, many of the KB15 IDs. Of course, we all knew they'd keep those, undoubtedly. On 1540, WPGR, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Now, in case you missed this, they were completely off the air from December the 25th until December the 29th, leaving WMDO, Dave Schmidt, hearing that one. And that looks like that wraps up the special items. Let's get into all the test information. And we have got buku bunches of it this month. Ah, such professionalism. And let's start out on 810 with WSJC, McGee, Mississippi. They were noted equal with WGY in Delaware with test tones at 0220 and partial IDs, as well as they were excellent with code IDs, music, and just a little splash from WBAP on 820. This heard in Mississippi. Of course, the date on that was December the 26th. On 1370, KFJM, Grand Forks, North Dakota. A couple of reports here on this one. They were noted with test tones at 0104 and an ID at 0134 in Wisconsin. They were fair from 0104 into 0130 with various tones, no IDs, over and under WSPD, that by John Malicki in Pennsylvania. They were noted strong with test tones, open carriers at appointed times over WSPD, yet no IDs were heard, that by Jerry Starr. And tentatively, they were noted with just voice IDs in several locations. And finally, on 1390, KSLM Salem, Oregon, was tentative way under CJCY on December the 9th. That heard in North Dakota. In Washington State, they heard them poor with CJCY, March music, Morse code, and voice IDs. They were not heard in Indiana. And Jerry Starr notes that they weren't even tried for because his local WFMJ signs on at 0500. And, of course, this test started at 0500 Eastern Time. So that wraps up the test information on this edition of the DX Digest. Let's get to just a couple of DX items of interest. One of them on 890 WQIS, Laurel, Mississippi. This station has really been getting out the past couple of weeks. I've noted traces of them several times. They're in Laurel, Mississippi on 890, and of course, for those of us here in the eastern part of the United States, 890, a frequency typically dominated by WLS in Chicago. They were noted on January the 2nd from 1758 until 1816. Good with no sign of WLS, playing urban and dance music. No live announcers, only recorded promos between selections. The sign-off consisted of an ID duel with Hattiesburg. Their slogan is Q89, and an open carrier was left on until at least 1821 when Jerry Starr tuned out of his reception. And they were also noted by Dave Schmidt, who noted them against WLS at least until 2330 on January the 12th. Why are we tubing HQ-180s? Yes, DXers do some strange things while they're listening to the radio. I think we can all concur on that. On 1160, one that I mentioned just a couple minutes ago, and I'll mention it again, WFEN in Fenton, Michigan. They first came on the air December the 1st. They've been noted in Ontario at 4:05 in the afternoon, good over WAMB with local news and mentions of being their first day on the air, and I can attest that they do have quite a powerful signal. They originally signed on with 700 watts of power, reduced power, but they are now running at a full 1,000 watts of power. Silent period is Monday mornings. Beyond that, they're on 24 hours a day. And for those of us who live fairly close to them, I myself, I think, is one of the prime unbenefactors of that. They pretty much close up 1160 for us. Several stations have been noted off the air with silent periods. Let me run through a couple of these for you. They might be of interest to you, especially might be of interest to you to be on the lookout for in the future. And there have been a lot of Clear Channel stations signing off temporarily. WSB 750 in Atlanta noted off December the 23rd at 0118. WLS in Chicago noted off December the 23rd at 0155. And at 0115 in a couple of locations. Many DXers tried for KDXU when they heard them off. Of course, that's out in Utah. But several powerful hits and a handful of unidentified Spanish kind of killed it on December the 23rd. On 1100-3WE, WWWE in Cleveland, Ohio was noted off on January the 6th. They were off all morning. And I think I had a report here, which I've temporarily lost. Here we go. The Big 84 WHAS in Louisville was noted off on January the 6th as well from 0220+. And finally, two other special items of note. On 950 CFAM in Altona, Manitoba was noted on November the 28th from 0140 until 0200. Excellent on an equipment test with open carriers and test tones. Neil Wolf is up in Winnipeg hearing that. On 1420 WIMS in Michigan City, Indiana, noted December the 19th from 0351 until 0535+ with an equipment test. They had open carriers, Christmas music on off. They were several times throughout the period with WHK and WOC noted in the pauses. This heard in Indiana. 1580 WLIM, Patchogue, New York, they appear several times with their equipment test. December the 30th, the latest, at midnight 20 with rock music, oldies and many IDs, Dave Schmidt in Delaware catching that. And on 1590 WJSO, Jonesboro, Tennessee, was noted on December the 10th from 0131 until 0201 with an equipment test carrying test tones and several IDs. And finally, a station that seems to be getting out quite well, and we'll report it here. Several DXers across the country have been hearing KYDE in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. One of my favorite towns in Pine Bluff. They are on 1590 kilohertz, and they were noted throughout December. December the 2nd from 0557 until 0630 with their sign on with America the Beautiful, IDs, News, Weather. Never heard prior to power increase with KEND, that in Oklahoma. In Ohio, Jerry Starr heard them December the 9th at 0557 with their sign-on with America the Beautiful. They're now full-time. On December the 18th at midnight 59, they were good with soul music. And then a sign-off with America the Beautiful at 0100. John Malicki in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, hearing that one as well. One pirate broadcast to take note of, and I must say that the pirates have been strangely silent, considering that the FCC has put out a somewhat of a, I guess we could say, an announcement that they have several towns picked out for pirate activity. On 1620 KOLD, they were heard December the 22nd. 2350, way over the beacons, with a steady S7 signal with 50s rock. They were off at 0027 on December the 23rd. So they were on for a couple hours. And 1620, 1610, a good frequency to be listening for pirates from, if you're into that sort of thing. A couple of items I'll repeat from past DX Digest, which I think bear repeating again. For those who are interested in foreign DXing, two stations that have been heard with increasing regularity this season have been 825 St. Kitts. They have religious programs in English with a good to great signal, depending on which part of the country you're in. And then one station which has really been getting out of late, 1610 Anguilla the Valley. They have been heard on December the 17th from 0443. Now remember, we're going to UTC here instead of Eastern Time, which the rest of the reports on the DX Digest are in, until 0500 with music, a very personable announcer. At 0449, they mentioned that they were 50,000 watts in a solid-state transmitter and would like letters of loud and clear reception. At 0500, their schedule was given in Atlantic time. They're on the air Atlantic time now from 5 a.m. to 4 p.m. on 690 and 100.1 megahertz, and from 4 p.m. to 1 a.m. on clear channel 1610 with 50,000 watts. Brian Vernon, again, as I said, hearing this one in Elsa, Yukon in Canada. And finally, they have been heard several places throughout the United States. Many reports at 0150 UTC with English religious broadcast, and very simply an easy foreign catch. And from what I understand now, a very good verifier considering their recent acquisition of a 50,000 watt transmitter. So if you haven't heard them, you might want to tune up to 1610 a couple of times and catch them. And Fred, before I sign it off here, I am going to impart some wisdom on you that I don't believe you know. And I steal this not from the National Radio Club, and I'm proud to admit I'm stealing it from DX Ontario, the publication of the Ontario DX Association, and Sean McCoy's Medium Wave Spectrum column. And he says, did you know that in Canada, a radio station actually cannot air a public service announcement unless it is in the middle of a program that deals with the topic or subject of the PSA? For example, a station cannot air a PSA for some charity's yard sale unless they are in the middle of a talk show about yard sales. Put this one in the stupid category. And that's Sean McCoy's comments, not mine. So, Fred, did you know?
No, I didn't know that, Bob. One, I guess, a good trivia question to throw out on this edition of the audio service. The call sign CKLW. What did the LW stand for in that call sign? We'll have the answer to that trivia question right after Mr. Tony Fitzherbert steps in with a look at the WVOI station profile.
Hi, this is Tony Fitzherbert with a National Radio Club station profile. You can write to me at 356 Jackman Avenue in Fairfield, Connecticut, 06432. What 1,000-watt radio station broadcasts using 12 towers and two sites, 20 miles apart, and since its 1966 licensing, has ID'd with five sets of call letters and has offered the Glass Capital five dramatically different formats? The answer is Toledo's hottest sound, WVOI.
It's 11:57 in Toledo. Time for Freeman Hudson to cut loose your radio. I'll be talking to you on Monday at 7 o'clock in the p.m. Let's knob stay where they are at 1520 on the a.m. side, because Coleman, the smooth operator, Woodard, is up next. As usual, everybody, I hate to let you, but I've got to win. As a matter of fact, Tina Turner is taking me home. We don't need another hero, or do we? Have a nice one, everybody.
Today, the only black-originated station in the over 700,000-populated metropolitan Toledo area, WVOI, offers a 24-hour urban contemporary sound. The station's sales staff research shows that over 11% of the Toledo area population is of black or Hispanic heritage, and the station is a major and welcome force in the community. WVOI began operations as WTTO on 1520 kilohertz in 1966. The 1,000-watt full-time station began as a rock top 40 outlet.
WTTO.
management of the station hopes to attract listeners from the already established WOHO and WTOD, also Top 40 Rockers.
In Toledo, we're the one. 147 WOHO.
We're in.
With the on ground.
WTOD 1560
is proud to know we can number all of you turned on people among our friends.
The station was programmed as a carbon copy of another successful rocker in the area, WKNR Detroit.
WKNR, much more music.
WTTO, remember.
And tried to emulate the 50 kilowatt powerhouses in the major markets, at times even sounding like WLS. The studios and offices were located in the then prestigious Commodore Perry Hotel in downtown Toledo on the fourth floor.
Music, that's our middle name, WTTO.
Music, we don't 15.
The transmitter sites were constructed in their present locations in Temperance, Michigan, and in Perrysburg, Ohio. The WTTO call stood for Welcome to Toledo, Ohio. As formats changed in the late 60s from screaming top 40 rockers to laid-back impression rock, so did the air sound of WTTO. At one time, the station took on an easy MOR flavor to compete with WCWA, which held ratings with a 25 to 40 demographic.
WTTO.
Later, the rock rolled on, but only for a brief period. The station changed hands from Shepherd Broadcasting to Ray Stay Broadcasting. The Ray Stay management decided that rock music was not the ideal format, so they decided to change the call letters and the format. Ironically, it was the last 3 months of rock and roll which produced the largest numbers that the station had ever held in the ratings. The new call letters? WTUU Country 15-2. The station's change to country was due in part to the success of WTOD, which was forced from top 40 to country by WTTO's success. The station held its own for some time and did put a dent into the then popular WTOD, but alas, management felt that WTUU was not a household word and decided to change the format again. They say that history repeats itself, and after the format was changed in April, it was learned that listenership doubled in the April book, effectively leading WTOD by a 2.3 margin. The owners of the station were approached by NBC to take on a new format called NBC's News and Information Service.
Sales of Ohio's lottery tickets were sporadic until an advertisement.
For the second year in a row, students who could have received federal money in
the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare is planning to end investigations of
New Hampshire Senate has passed legislation.
In the absence of an all-news outlet in Toledo, and inspired by WINS, WCBS, WBBM, and KYW rating miracles, the station's owners felt, why not Toledo? So WANR, All News Radio, was born. WANR, with a heavy NBC feed, competition from WSPD, the established news station in Toledo, and skyrocketing overhead met with little success. The station was again put up for sale. WANR was purchased by Hal Gore in 1975, and the Gore Broadcasting Company changed the call letters to WGOR. Mr. Gore dropped the news in favor of an all-gospel format, mixing paid religion and gospel music, directed toward Toledo's black and other ethnic populations. Hal Gore also owned WTOW in Towson, Maryland, and WZIP down in Southern Ohio, which also touted the Gore format. The format was a cross between religion and the easy sounds of the Sudbrink Easy format that made many FM beautiful music stations very successful and profitable in the early 60s. Later, the WGOR call sign was dropped for the more appropriate WVOI for the voice of inspiration. Mr. Gore decided to sell WVOI and his other stations to Jayco Broadcasting. The religion was dropped for disco in an attempt to build listenership among Toledo's black population after KLR FM, Cooler 99, was changed from black to country and western. No other station served exclusively this substantial market. More recently, the disco has been modified to a toned-down urban contemporary format. News is supplied by the Sheridan Network. No local news is carried. Contests and remote broadcasts reveal that the station has indeed cultivated a large and loyal audience. Because of the very directional signal, WVOI's chief engineer receives virtually no DX reports, although NRC'er and WCHE chief engineer Dave Schmidt, on a trip to the North Carolina area, noted that WVOI showed up down there. In a city with five AM stations and five FM stations, and with one of the most directional patterns in the United States, WVOI appears to have met the challenge of developing a loyal audience and establishing itself as an institution in Toledo's substantial ethnic market. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank two people who have contributed very liberally of their time and of their knowledge and recollections of WVOI and its predecessors in assisting in the preparation of this station profile. The first is Fred Bobie. Fred is one of those instrumental, of course, in putting together the DX audio service. In developing and fostering his broadcast career, Fred is an alumnus of WTUU and WANR before he moved on to bigger and better things. Fred, we want to thank you very much for taking the time to share with us your recollections, your experiences, and your knowledge of WVOI and its history. Also, I'd like to thank very much WVOI Chief Engineer Tim Perry. Tim was of great assistance in the preparation of this WVOI profile. He shared freely of his knowledge of the station in an August meeting with me, in which he gave me the cook's tour of the entire physical facility. Tim has spent many hours applying his expertise in rehabilitating the WVOI physical plant, and his willingness to set aside time to assist with this profile is very deeply appreciated. I hope you've enjoyed this station profile, and I would enjoy hearing from you. For the DX Audio Service, I'm Tony Fitzer.
WTTO.
I'd like to thank Tony for putting together the WVOI profile for us on this edition of the DX Audio Service, and hopefully Tony will be back with us in the very near future with another station profile. And why not take the time to write him a letter or a card and let him know what you thought about the WVOI profile, as well as maybe some comments, criticisms, or even maybe some suggestions on stations you'd like to hear profiles from. Write to Tony at the address which he mentioned during the profile. And again, we're sorry for the quality of the audio track. We got zipped by the post office. What can we say? That's it. Cut and dry. The answer to our trivia question, what does the LW stand for in the call sign CKLW? Well, the call sign stands for London-Windsor, which are the two principal communities which CKLW serves. Of course, CKLW is a.k.a. the Big Eight, as we know it in this part of the country. Broadcasters could get a fine as much as $1 million, this news story from Washington and Associated Press News. Sweeping changes in parts of the Federal Communication Commission law, including the dumping of the fairness, equal time, and reasonable access requirements on broadcasters, were proposed by the Federal Communications Commission on Thursday, January the 30th. Congress may also be asked to increase the maximum fine the FCC can impose against a broadcaster to $1 million. Under the proposal, the right of a citizen to ask the commission to revoke a radio or TV license would be limited to reduce frivolous complaints that waste time for the commission and broadcasters, and limit the ability of challengers to make substantial profits by agreeing not to oppose the granting of a broadcast license. Now, in effect, a broadcaster who was not seriously violating the law or FCC regulations would be immune from a challenge at renewal time from another party who seeks to prove that they could do a better job. The authority to increase the FCC's fining power from $20,000 to perhaps $100,000 or $1 million would give the commission clout against rich broadcasters without having to resort to ultimate penalties such as license revocation. FCC Chairman Mark S. Fowler said, "The notion that government can come in and padlock a business is un-American. Broadcasters ought to be as free as the print media," he said. FCC officials concede that no one on Capitol Hill has agreed to introduce the 24-point legislative package. "If Congress won't do anything, I hope the courts will," Fowler said during a discussion at the Fairness Doctrine, which the FCC in August found constitutionally suspect. The Radio Television News Directors Association has asked the U.S. Court of Appeals to force the FCC itself to repeal the doctrine, which the FCC invented, but Congress has referred to the doctrine in subsequent laws, which have been interpreted by some as meaning only Congress can repeal it. Senate legislation to repeal the fairness requirements was defeated in committee in 1984. No hearing has been held since it was reintroduced in 1985. The fairness doctrine requires a station to cover controversial issues and to allow all sides time to discuss them. Equal time provisions require a station to offer the same amount of airtime at the price to all candidates for political office. And that wraps it up for this edition of the DX Audio Service for February 1986. The DX Audio Service may not be reproduced in whole or part without the express written permission from the DX Audio Service and the National Radio Club Incorporated, Post Office Box 24, Cambridge, Wisconsin, 53523-0024. Thank you for listening.
City, fill the air with song.